the Dead Zone Containment Protocols from Mantic Games.
Best Laid Plans by Matt Gilbert. Harry Klinsman crouched in the gray muck, left foot twisted under a battered speeder engine, and knees sunk into the cold, cloudy puddle at the foot of the makeshift roadblock. Kreinig had passed by some 15 seconds ago and moved out of sight down the street. Tavor was east, tracking the Leaper as it trailed the Sorek. Unaware, it too was being hunted. The barrier of junk lying piled across the intersection looked like it had been thrown together in a desperate attempt to protect the hab blocks to the west. The collateral damage in the area and the bloody evidence that stained the pockmarked ground and shattered walls of the surrounding buildings told the story of the Defender's last fatal moments. Days of rain showers had failed to sluice away the worst of the gore, but had done a fine job of turning the broken permacrete road into a treacherous, ankle-breaking surface. Harry pushed back further into the scrap wall, crushing up painfully against some protruding plastic conduit wrapped around a rusting iron bar. The bar was rammed into the ground, shoring up the wall, but looked like it could give way at any moment. Harry had no confidence it would stand up to any kind of violence. A small fire caused by a stray shot crackled in a building to the left, bringing back memories of countless other missions, of other battles in drab, gray landscapes ravaged by war. It was a scene played out on a myriad of other worlds across the length and breadth of the GCPS. The glitzy, polished, and civilized image projected by the corporations cracked and crumbled in the face of reality. Away from the core worlds in particular, Harry mused, life could be mean, a harrowing contrast to the ideal promoted by the commercial juggernaut that both fed the system and, in the eyes of the rebellion, corrupted it from within. A subtle change in the air snapped Harry from further reverie. Veteran instincts kicked in, and Harry carefully, slowly reached up and switched off the rebreather. Though the threat of contagion was ever present, being concealed meant being hidden from all senses, not just sight. The mechanical reverberations from the air mask could invite discovery and with it death. Harry felt the wall move, the iron bar shifting forward ominously, while metal scraped with a nerve-shuddering screech. The speeder engine bit down and Harry grimaced with pain. It was on top of the wall. The plague stench palpable now Harry's nose was exposed to the foul air. The creature paused, the quivering of its plague-enhanced muscles vibrating through the assortment of scrap metal fragments beneath its feet. It sniffed the air, sensing its quarry was near.
Now would be good,
Harry thought.
It can taste me in the wind.
On cue, Kreinig emerged from the ruins of an industrial unit 40 meters down the street. The Sorek warrior soared through the smashed window of the building, nimbly avoiding the lethal shards of broken plexiglass that ridged the frame like teeth of some huge grinning carnivorous worm. Landing in the road, he roared a challenge to the beast. As the creature's head snapped up to focus on the new prey, Harry pulled the trigger of the Mars Corps RT-4 Perrin pistol that was aimed directly at its head. An urgent beam of energy lanced straight through the jaw and out the top of its skull, vaporizing the oily skin and flash-boiled the monster's feral brain. The body dropped like a puppet with severed strings, sliding down the wall to land slumped over the iron bar, which stubbornly bore the extra weight and kept the body from suffocating its executioner below. Easing a leg, now numb with blood loss and cold, from under the crush of metal detritus, Harry re-engaged the rebreather and flipped the comlink.
Scratch one Leaper,
she called in. Lucas Hagen's right eye flicked rapidly over the data scrolling across his retinal HUD while his datapad recorded the survey traffic. 60 meters away, the section's RX-10 survey drone was scanning the buildings for any signs of plague forces. They'd successfully herded the dozen or so ghouls and Soul Leaper towards the intersection and into the ambush. It seemed to be an isolated group. The area had been thought abandoned, and they'd been ordered to a med lab there to reconnoiter for supplies. The little drone, dubbed Rex by Lucas, had screamed a warning just before the tainted had appeared and started laying down fire. Swerving out of sight, the drone had begun streaming data back to Lucas and Harry, and the section had fallen smoothly back into defensive formation. Once the size of the threat was established, Harry had called for a snare and go, a tactic the section was well versed in. Suck in the enemy, and then roll them over. Rex was streaming data about the positions of the ghouls as they followed the Leaper through the ruins. The RX unit seemed jittery and was trying to attract Lucas's attention, but he needed to focus. Rex was reliable and had a good field record, but sometimes the nascent personality the unit was developing bordered on quirky. Now was not the time for games, and Lucas sent back the data packet to quell the drone's excitement. It was not uncommon to find pockets of the infected long after the area was marked as cleansed, or at least depopulated enough for the infection to have burned itself out in the local vicinity. Any remaining packs roaming like wild dogs, the Leapers desperate for food, and the ghouls simmering with a barely controlled rage and an urge for mortal violence. If carefully managed, they could be contained and neutralized. Driven by their insatiable, warped emotions and desires, small groups like this could be led into a net they couldn't escape from. That wasn't to say they were not a threat. A ravenous runner, as their official designation tagged them, was still a vicious killer. The ghouls were armed, and when not consumed with blind rage, could still coordinate an intelligent assault or resistance. With the Yindish Tavor stalking the group from behind, the Grogan twins waiting in a retail unit on the south side, and the devil lurking in the alleyway to the north, the trap was about to be sprung. When Harry called back in on the link, Lucas sent the encrypted trigger on the section's private comnet, cleanse and burn. Fonik calmed his breathing and briefly closed his eyes. The Grogan warrior could feel the cool, comforting weight of his massive onslaught cannon, Isabel, in his arms. His sister, Even, had laughed when he named the weapon, calling him soft for using a human moniker. He didn't care. He liked the way the name sounded, even when spoken in the gruff, unsophisticated tones of galactic standard used by humans. It was funny, he reflected, how humans thought the same for the Grogan's language. In the end, Even had announced that she too was naming her weapon, but not with some feeble human appellation. Her Desolator was going to have a title which bluntly expressed its purpose. Once, he'd been asked by Harry to explain what the name meant. He'd explained that while there was no direct translation, Hammerfist was the best match. Even braced herself in her firing position on the first floor of the abandoned shopping mart. What had once been a storeroom was now a ruin of smashed shelving, rotting foodstuffs, and a gaping hole in the floor. Brown concentric stains discolored cheap ceiling tiles, and the polluted water seeping through them dropped metronomically onto the exposed support struts in the floor below, only to be sent spinning further into the dismal space beyond. Even imagine that this room had seen looting, fighting, panic, and fear in the past months, probably in equal measure. The water from the tank above drained away into the void beneath while it slowly corrupted everything it touched, a sad metaphor for the fate of life on this dying world. Her wrist pad bleeped, and her HUD flared into life with a spiraling light display, bathing her cheeks in emerald luminescence. Data points relayed from Rex and Lucas painted a picture of the enemy positions. The marker for the solitary leaper was slowly fading away. As she turned her head towards the window, the crimson blips representing the ghouls rendered themselves across the augmented reality of the outside world. As a group of three blips converged into one, and the tainted creatures moved into line of sight, she grinned and activated the firing mechanism of the portable mass driver resting on her huge, squared shoulder. A half second before the high-voltage capacitors discharged, the route of the projectile was drawn in a haze of expanded air, a particle beam tracer reducing the air density and proving a near-frictionless slipstream for the hypersonic round which succeeded it. The torso of the ghoul lying directly in the path of the projectile was atomized in an explosion of red mist, and the thunderclap that rolled down the road announced the fate of the two-story building fascia opposite as it collapsed lazily into the street, throwing up a cloud of choking dust. Even before the telltale shimmer sliced through the air, Fonik had sensed, as he often did with his twin, the moment that Even's finger had depressed her trigger. Though built using similar technology to Even's coil gun, hers was designed primarily as a tank killer, where Fonik's onslaught cannon was built as an infantry killer, and for pure rate of fire. Fonik's eyes snapped open as he watched as the destruction wrought by his sibling played out across the street from him. The ghouls scattered, fleeing the disintegrating building, as Isabel hummed into life. Fonik's massive frame swept the cannon across the street, stitching a trail of ruin to mark its course. While the Baeleth twins were raining down death on the uglies, the devil waited in the shadows of the passage between the two wrecked light commercial hubs. Garbage and other detritus littered the floor, and piles of rubble, broken permacrete slabs, and charred timber were stacked on either side, making the cramped alley even more claustrophobic. He looked up. The walls seemed to close in as they reached out towards an unforgiving sky, heavy with the threat of more storms. The weather here at Outpost K-34 had been unstable over the last 3 weeks, with bouts of intense rain, fierce solar burn, and two almost hurricane-force storms. The planet seemed to be in turmoil. Reaching out to trace his calloused fingers across the buckled surface of the wall to his side, following the scrawling graffiti proclaiming the end of the world, Francesco Salvaggio felt at home.
10.
He breathed in the air slowly, savoring the musty, earthy aroma kicked up by the recent cloudburst.
9.
Rebreathers were for those paranoid about airborne infection. As long as you kept a respectful distance from the primary brutes, shunned the local water, and incinerated anything that got too close, existing here boiled down to simple rules.
8.
In fact, you could apply the same tenets anywhere, really.
7.
He thumbed the activator on the gunpiece and watched with satisfaction as the pilot light sputtered into being. A cold blue flame flickered with potential.
6.
The Uglies were moving down the sidewalk, fleeing the Grogan kill zone to regroup.
5.
They were scattering slower than Salvaggio had anticipated, but only by a fraction.
4.5.
He shifted the weight of the tanks on his back with a slight shrug of his shoulders.
4.
Raising the nozzle of the Mechleft Industries Mark II Voland burner unit, he settled his aim on the bright passage entrance, bracketed by the shadowed walls.
3.
The first of the Uglies ducked into the alleyway, eyeballing the immediate area with a wild and hurried glance. It didn't see him.
2.
Its two fellows quickly followed, finding temporary shelter from the firestorm coming from across the street.
1.
One was already injured, shrapnel having shredded one side of its face, though it seemed oblivious. The first prepared to fire back from the protection of the building's corner. They didn't want to be pinned.
0.
3 tortured souls were taken by the devil, led to a blazing hell from which they would never return. Harry stepped through the skeleton of the broken door and into the cantina.
5 minutes, then we head out.
Lucas looked up as she entered and returned to whatever he was doing with Rex. The tech skulked in a corner with a little drone unit, which seemed quite excited about something.
He's getting too attached to that thing,
she reflected.
One day, the Texan command will ignore him and wipe its core clean.
She took in the room with a sweep of her head, and then eased into a booth, parking herself on a dusty seat with a chipped plastic table. Rex had started developing a personality of sorts after Lucas had been hacking around one evening, experimenting with low-level AI mods. Since then, the unit had shown a degree of self-preservation, which went beyond its standard programming, as well as other unexpected signs of sentience. Lucas might be young and new to the platoon, but his skill as a code splitter had earned him the respect of the company techs, and so far, they acquiesced to his refusal to let the machine get cleaned and reinstalled. Standard practice after most field deployments. The twins were leaning against the bar, having brushed the broken glass and debris on the floor. Even muttered something in her deep, gravelly voice, and Phonic responded with a booming laugh. In the booth opposite, Salvaggio slouched against the wall, slowly eating slivers of a Cronian pike fruit, which he was slicing with a wicked-looking knife.
Where the hell did he get that from?
They'd run out of the small amount of fresh food they had 10 days ago, and had been living on the crap that passed for field rations since then. Harry turned as Krynik bounded through the door, using both feet and hands to propel himself off a seat back and onto the bar top beside the twins. He began to clean his teeth with the curling talon of his right foot. He blinked and rolled his eyes toward Salvaggio.
Where did you get that, Herman?
The Sorok glared at the weathered-looking man casually sprawled across the way. The transcript unit at his throat turned his lisping, breathing natural speech into aggressive rasping, while noise was the best way to describe it. Salvaggio gently lowered the piece he was about to put in his mouth and jutted his chin towards the archway at the end of the bar.
Chiller,
he said, using the end of his knife to brush a ringlet of salt-and-pepper hair to one side, revealing a livid scar running from the corner of his right eye down to his jaw.
Out back.
Lucas looked up.
There's still power?
He questioned.
How come?
Salvaggio shrugged and returned to his fruit. Krynik snorted and tilted his head to regard the man known as the Devil. His long tongue flicked out and slid over his large, mandibular incisors, and he grinned before vaulting onto the floor and disappearing into the storeroom. There was a crash and the sound of crockery and other breakables being deconstructed, and finally a throaty scream. The Sorok appeared in the archway, feet gripping the frame.
I'm tall,
he proclaimed accusingly.
That was the only one.
The Devil dropped the stone onto the table, grinned, and closed his eyes. Krynik's eyes flashed with anger, but he visibly controlled himself and returned to the bar top to engage the Grogans.
Enough, Salvaggio,
chided Harry.
You don't need any more enemies. No one can count that high.
They all looked round as the last of their section walked into the room. The Indige gracefully crossed the floor and slid in opposite Harry. He carefully placed his vast array of knives, grenades, darts, gun, and backpack on the table, placing his hand on each in turn and whispering in his primitive tongue. It often amazed Harry that one so slight could carry so much with such stealth, as if unencumbered. When he was satisfied the ritual was complete, the Indige turned his glassy black eyes to his section leader.
Trouble?
Harry asked.
Not really, sir.
The Indige's flattened face and flared nasal features made it difficult for them to speak galactic standard and articulate the sounds correctly. But Tavor was a stubborn and conscientious student. His mastery of the language was now nearly flawless.
There were some ghouls trailing behind us, the main group. But they've been dealt with. I've checked and the area is clear now.
He stretched his back and his tail flicked over to rest on his shoulder. Harry relaxed a fraction. While they all trusted Rex's ability to actively scan and survey for biological and mechanical threats, any soldier worth his credits liked to know there were real eyes on the ground to confirm that, especially Tavor. His hunter's instinct meant he needed to see his surroundings with his own eyes to believe it. Heavy metal deposits, magnetic fields, unshielded power conduits, and natural phenomena were all on the list of things that which could disrupt scanners, throw up anomalous readings, or simply mask the truth.
Fine,
Harry said.
How far did that little diversion take us from our target? I'm guessing about 400 meters or so in the wrong direction.
Not quite that far, sir, but close. I estimate we fall back about 385 meters. A little under 4 blocks.
Hey, Lucas.
Harry turned and called over the young field tech, cum comms man.
What are the numbers on our fallback? I've got 10 creds on near 400 meters.
Lucas consulted one of his data pads and made 2 lateral swipes across the surface.
From where we first sighted the Leaper to our current location is 382 meters. But sir, Rex thinks that...
Harry raised a hand.
Thanks, kid.
She interrupted and twisted back to face the Yindish.
Add another 10 to what I owe you. Next time, it's double or quits. Okay, people.
She raised her voice again, addressing the room to kill any chatter and make sure minds were focused on her.
Get ready to roll. Lucas, Rex out first as normal. 50 meters head start. Standard formation for the rest of us.
Rex emitted a series of bleeps, and his surface interface flashed through the spectrum.
Sir, Rex requests you to look at something interesting.
Lucas hurried to his feet and stared expectantly at Harry. Tavor sat upright and shifted to face the boy.
Since when did a drone find something interesting?
Since the kid started messing with its damned insides.
Growled Salvaggio, opening his eyes and shuffling to the end of the seat. His knife disappeared somewhere in a pocket, and he leaned back, steepling his fingers and turning a cold, expressionless face in Lucas's direction. Harry sighed.
Okay, let's hear it,
she said.
What's he found?
Lucas was staring nervously at Salvaggio, transfixed.
Lucas.
Harry raised her voice a notch.
What's Rex got?
Lucas blinked and stumbled over to the table.
Sorry.
He mumbled. Harry put a hand on his shoulder.
It's okay,
she said.
Show us what you two have found.
She glared at Salvaggio, who acknowledged her with a shift in his eyes, the corner of his mouth twitching upwards, an almost imperceptible fraction.
Here.
Rex had joined Lucas at the table and was hovering at his side, projecting a hollow map of the area onto the surface. Lucas was adding data to the display.
Look at the tracking data from the last engagement.
He was agitated again, but this time with excitement and not nerves.
Rex, run the data as a sequential time series blip map, 15-second intervals, and pan out. Show a 5-block radius from this point.
Rex zoomed the viewpoint out and ran the sequence. The red blips moved through the virtual landscape and eventually winked out.
Okay,
said Harry.
What are we looking at?
Now run the data you have from the engagement fought 2 weeks ago, Rex.
Lucas prompted.
The one where Vortex and Talon platoons hit that corporation convoy moving through this same area.
Phonic's voice rumbled from above and behind the comms man.
The one the plague came in on?
Yeah. Gate crashed the captain's party. Look.
Rex started the sequence running. Blue blips representing the rebel forces and gold denoting the convoy started moving on the tabletop.
Speed up the relay, Rex, and mute all the humans a bit so the plague are easier to see.
Lucas pointed to the top of the map.
Here they come.
A red wall of blips moved down the map. After a while, the other forces reacted, and to trained military eye, started coordinating their responses and falling back together. As the blips moved off the map and the sequence ended, Even stirred and spoke up.
So what? I see nothing of interest here.
Wait a minute,
said Harry.
Rex, play both sequences back together. Adjust the timing on each to synchronize the movement of the plague forces.
Lucas looked at Harry with shining eyes. She'd seen it too. Rex reran the 2 recordings, overlaying one on another.
Now that's interesting,
Harry said, sitting back on the seat.
Does someone want to explain it to me?
Even frowned, nonplussed.
They are avoiding something.
Lucas jumped. The devil had snuck up behind him when he hadn't been looking, and he instinctively tried to move further from the grizzled veteran. Salvaggio stepped up to the table to look at the frozen image.
Drone, reverse the tracking slowly to show our lumbering friend here what the others can see clearly.
Even glowered, but held her tongue and turned her attention to the rewinding images.
Stop!
Snapped Salvaggio.
There it is.
Krennic sprung up to the back of the seat behind Devore's shoulder for a better view. His eyes widened as he saw it too.
This area here.
Tavor's clawed hand took a ghostly green hue as he reached into the map to indicate what he was looking at.
No plague go near this area. No leapers, no ghouls. Even the brute presented us first engagement moves away. Our group today split and avoided the same area rather than pass through it. It's a low-level head blocks. Not so difficult to move through. I thought we were attempting to divide into two attacking forces today, as I followed them in. But perhaps not.
It's nothing I've seen before, nor ever heard of.
Harry rejoined.
The plague are pretty thorough, but it is interesting.
She said, favoring Lucas with a lopsided smile.
It's also on our route to the lab.
Phonic noted.
Shall we take a look?
Anything the plague scum are avoiding can't be good.
Even replied.
I say it's an anomaly to be ignored.
On the other hand,
Harry mused.
Anything that the plague are shunning might be something we really want.
She tapped her fingers on the table while she thought. It was en route, but she had to consider the fact that they were already behind schedule. If this was something valuable, she daren't risk passing it by. Her people were important, but so was the cause they were fighting for. If there was an asset out there they could profit from, it would be prudent to investigate. She sat up and looked at each of them in the eyes.
We're going. At the very least, we should investigate and report back on what we found.
Even didn't look impressed, but remained silent. Lucas's eyes twinkled with delight, and Rex warbled happily. Salvaggio stared at the drone in disgust and turned away, scowling. Phonic patted his sister on the back and picked up his cannon from the bar.
I concur, sir,
said Tavor, after consideration, starting to gather his weapons together. Krynik simply licked his lips and nodded acceptance. Harry stood.
Let's go. Rex, lead the way. Full active scans as we approach the coordinates. We stop 25 meters before the area our sleuths here have found.
She jerked a thumb in the direction of Lucas and Rex, who were heading to the exit. One by one, the others followed them out. Harry stopped in the doorway and glanced back inside. Just weeks ago, this place would have been full of life, buzzing with conversation, laughter, and folk satisfied after a day's hard work. The people who had flocked to populate newly found worlds on the frontiers, like this, were opportunists, who also had to be pure optimists at heart. They would have lived life to the full. Now the joint looked like all the other buildings here, all telling the same sorry tale. As she took a step outside, a stray thought skated through her mind.
Since when did I start thinking of Rex as a he?
She shook her head, checked her weapons, and left the sad-looking cantina behind. The RX-10 hugged a wall, skipping over the ground in short, regular bursts of speed. 10 meters. Stop. Active scan, including full biosweep. Relay result. Move on. The anti-grav repel boosters kicked up dust as it skimmed across a sidewalk and through a gaping hole in a crumbling wall, dodging under a fallen girder, and into the wreck of a modest apartment. The kitchenette sported two staccato lines of automatic weapons damage that traced across the far wall and into the cramped living space. Shattered furniture lay on the ground, and one metal chair had clearly been forcibly put through the plexiglass screen of the tri-vid viewer. A faux leather seat, a luxury not often seen on the frontier worlds, and rarely in possession of laboring workforce, was caked in dried gore, as was the floor underneath it. The seat back was split apart by three parallel slashes, the packing fibers inside spilling out like entrails from a ruptured belly. Similar claw marks and several fist-sized holes adorned the other walls, and the drone even registered human blood splattered across the ceiling. What remained of the former occupant was rotting under a stack of falling data cards and other personal effects, one leg missing, the other bent at an impossible angle. The drone moved on, zipping behind a burned-out civilian ground car, logging the charred bodies inside, and then crossing the road to the corner of the next intersection. The code looped in the process of executing its survey program, and the analyzing cycle restarted. As the data was returned, it was pre-processed and then streamed into removable storage chips in the drone's auxiliary memory bay. A secondary daemon cloned, encrypted, and fired the processed data packs back to the pads held by Harry and Lucas over a shielded, private channel. They'd see whatever it saw. This time, 30 meters from the center of the area, the team had observed the plague avoiding. The bioscan got a hit. It was weak, but the drone reran the scan twice, more to confirm the result. It received a message from Harry's pad. Move in. 10 meters further, the signal was still weak, but analysis from other data streams concluded that this was probably due to interference from the composition of the construction materials used in the hab blocks. While most were prefab formations shipped in from off-world, local supplies may have been substituted in places during construction as the initial stocks depleted. The Rebel survey routines had not yet been successfully calibrated for the alien materials, and the ores that might be present. Cautiously, the drone moved towards the coordinates, now traveling in less frequent 5-meter bursts. Incoming tracking data from the rest of the section indicated they were gaining on its position. 15 meters from the source, it boosted into a shattered plexiglass window above the ground floor and switched on the visual feed. Lucas heard Harry approach and beckoned her towards where he was crouched as he watched Rex slip through the open window. He switched his primary window to the visual stream Rex was beaming back as Harry dropped down beside him to observe. Lucas subconsciously moved to undo his rebreather, but Harry caught and stayed his hand, indicating with a nod of her head the decomposing arm protruding from under a pile of rubble nearby. While the plague may be close to burning itself out locally, it didn't mean that unnecessary exposure to any of the deceased was without danger. In addition to the plague, this was still a war zone, and the unburied dead still posed a potent biological threat. Diseases tearing through populations already ravaged by fighting was a common scenario the galaxy over, and had been since the dawn of civilization. There was no harm in being cautious. Rex moved up a corridor, showing all signs of a close-quarter firefight. In all, he passed 3 civilian bodies and the bulkier frame of a corporation trooper.
Those people were protecting something,
Harry observed with a veteran's eye.
They were defending the corridor and whatever's on the other side of that door.
Lucas frowned.
Look at the results of these scans.
He swiped in a scrolling data block to look closer.
Rex, run those last scans on the bodies again.
Rex complied, and Harry leaned in closer.
What is it?
She asked.
All the evidence is showing that this fight took place about 10 days ago, except the decomposition of those bodies puts them being dead for approximately...
He swiped the screen and dropped the refreshed data onto another analysis module. He stared for a second and rocked backwards, scratching his head.
2 days.
Harry looked at the data again.
Okay, Rex,
she said.
I want a focused bioscan on whatever is on the other side of that door.
Rex bleeped a confirmation. Phonic and Even arrived, and Harry briefed them, and the others, over the section comlink.
We're wasting time,
muttered Salvaggio. Harry chose to ignore the remark. They didn't have to wait long. Seconds later, and new data began to cascade down the screen of Lucas's pad.
Whoa, okay.
He breathed.
We have a live one, human, female, and the readings indicate pre-adolescent.
A child?
Harry exclaimed.
How has a child managed to survive in this hellhole?
Yes, but a weak and hungry one. She's showing signs of prolonged lack of nutrition and is dehydrated. Otherwise, her vital signs are clean. Amazingly clean, in fact. We need a better med scan than Rex can provide, but she reads totally free of any infection or illness on the limited data we could pull.
Lucas looked at Harry.
What do we do?
We leave her.
The grating voice of the devil announced his arrival.
She's a risk we don't need.
Be quiet, Salvaggio. If I want your opinion, I'll ask for it. She's all alone, just like I was.
Harry spoke into the comm. Rex slowly opened the door.
Let's get a look at her, but don't frighten her. We've no telling how she'll react or what her state of mind is.
Salvaggio growled and spat onto the floor as the picture showed Rex moving down the corridor towards the door. When it failed to open as he approached, he tried to gently nudge it, but it wouldn't respond.
Probably barricaded herself in from the other side.
Phonic noted.
There's another window which must lead into a room, or near it on the other side.
Tavor's voice cut over the link with a small burst of static.
Krynig and I have a visual from our current positions.
Harry nodded to Lucas, and he instructed Rex to exit and skirt the building, coming in again from another angle. They all watched, hooked on the images being fed back to the screen, as the drone moved out and round the building, locating the other, smaller window hole. Moving through the frame, Rex entered a small bedroom area, the low-level bed frame taking up most of the floor space. While the window was broken and the plexiglass lay in glittering fragments on the floor, the rest of the room looked fairly orderly.
Must be through that door.
Lucas pointed on his pad and raised an eyebrow at Harry. She nodded.
Go through, Rex.
Rex glided slowly to the door and gently rolled on his longitudinal axis to allow him to pass between the sliding access panels, which had settled 3/4 open. He turned, and from his left caught the movement as a young girl half picked herself off the floor and scrambled into the furthest corner of the room. She looked thin and dirty. Her black hair fell in a scruffy mess around her shoulders, and she pushed herself as far into the corner as she could, knees drawn up and eyes wide open. Her grimy face couldn't mask the tearful streaks running down her cheeks, but she glared at the intruder with a steady defiance which impressed Harry.
I know that face. That's the face of someone who's lost everything. But the look is not one of defeat, it's one of defiance. I've been this girl.
Harry realized she'd been holding her breath and let it out slowly. What did you say to a child you found in a war zone like this?
What did people say to me? Give me an audio broadcast, Rex. Hello?
Harry said, feeling self-conscious and clumsy.
Are you on your own in there? Stupid question.
The girl glared, and then threw the grubby plush toy she'd been clinging to at Rex, immediately looking like she'd regretted doing so. It bounced off Rex's bodywork and fell spinning to the floor. The girl eyed it nervously, but stayed curled up in the corner.
It's okay, kid. Rex here's not gonna hurt you.
Harry tried to put some reassurance in her voice.
I'm Harry, by the way. I'm outside with some friends of mine.
The girl continued to glower fiercely back at Rex.
You hungry, kid?
Harry paused, letting the girl mull the question over. After a while, she seemed to relax slightly. Her shoulders and head slumped a little, and she lowered her eyes. She nodded.
Okay, we have some ration bars and some water, but we'll need to come to you. Are you okay for us to do that?
The girl continued to stare at the ground, but another small bob of her head showed she accepted the offer. Harry muted the audio.
This complicates things. Can we really look after this kid safely? Is it right to just give her some food and water and leave her for pickup later? No. She'll be left as low priority. Very low. Command don't have the time or inclination to look after her.
She closed her eyes as half-formal images and fleeting fragments of suppressed emotions flashed through her mind. Caught up on the fringes of the protest march, her parents shot dead by the stray fire from a corporation arbitration squad. Kneeling by their unmoving bodies as the scattering crowds fled the scene, the corporation hunting down the protesters, unaware of the stunned child, clinging on the prone bodies of her parents, unaware or uncaring. The emptiness, the loneliness, the hunger, the cold. Harry knew what it meant to be left alone.
Command don't have the time or inclination to look after her, but I do.
She took a deep breath.
I'm going in to get her,
she announced. Salvaggio sputtered.
What the frack for? She's just some skinny punk kid who's just going to slow us down and either get her or one of us killed.
I tend to agree, sir.
Tavor's voice crackled over the comm.
Perhaps we can just call this in. Command can pick her up later.
Command will not send in a pickup team for a small girl who happens to still be alive despite insane odds.
Harry replied.
Sadly, she wouldn't be considered worth the resources. She's not what we made Planetfall for.
Then why are we having this conversation?
Salvaggio asked, clearly exasperated.
She's not important, and we don't need her as a neurodium weight dragging under our feet.
Harry put some steel in her voice.
This is not a conversation, because I've made up my mind and we're taking her with us.
She rose up as she spoke, and stood eye to eye with Salvaggio.
My order is to assist me in that endeavor.
Salvaggio let out a hissing breath.
We are under no military obligation to play wet nurse to any filthy urchins we stumble across.
We have a moral obligation to help people in need.
Harry barked back, her face inches from Salvaggio's now.
Just because the corporations have abandoned these people to their fate doesn't mean humanity as a whole has to. We are here. She is here. And we have the chance to do the right thing right now. I'm fighting to help abandoned people like this girl. What are you fighting for, Salvaggio?
The devil snarled and bared his yellowing teeth, but said no more and stepped away. Harry turned to the others.
Anyone else got any objections?
Lucas looked startled, but shook his head quickly, and the two Grogans looked at each other before replying.
We agree with your decision.
The comlink buzzed.
We will follow your orders.
Harry calmed herself, let the brief surge of anger pass. She turned back to the datapad and reestablished the audio broadcast.
It's okay, kid. Don't be scared. It's gonna be okay now. We're coming to get you.
Franz watched the Rebs move out. The Indish last of them to leave the area, darting from cover to cover, and then disappearing from sight. He hated them. He hated them all. The rage he felt since he woke up 2 weeks ago was a seething, insidious venom coursing through his body. Boiling ice was the best way to describe it. He wanted to kill. Kill anything that made him angry. And everything made him angry. The thing in the apartment made him livid. He wanted to kill it for days, but it made him sick. He tried to get to it. Tried to get inside the building, but something terrible held him back. Something deep inside his subconscious was repulsed. A dizzying sense of wrongness that confused and disoriented him, pulling at the threads of his already shredded sanity. If he got too close, he began to feel physically ill, too. It was incapacitating. It was infuriating. But as the Rebs had left, so had the monstrous presence that lurked in the apartment. Franz licked his lips and stared coldly after the departing Yindish. The lurking terror outside was gone, but the rage inside began to swell and pulse once more. He wanted to kill it. He wanted to find it and tear it apart. But first he'd kill the ones now helping it. Franz picked up its weapons and began to hunt.